Hello and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of arts and culture. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for host David LaTulipe, and today I'll be speaking with Mick Mize, whose solo show Under the Lintel is opening on Saturday at the Live Oak Theater in Berkeley. Emily Dorisis will be here to tell us about 50 Shades of Grey, the musical. I'll be speaking in a moment with Dan Mitchell, the star of Damn Yankees, which will be coming up at Smithwick in Los Altos. And Diane Keough will give her insights on some recent theater on the peninsula. So stay tuned for that. Let's listen to a little bit of Damn Yankees.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
A little hold down in honor of our new star.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
What'd you say his name was?
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
She's gonna call him Shoeless Joe. Gee, Miss Thorpe, you sure get some wonderful ideas.
Oh, I got lots of ideas. Who came along in a puff of smoke?
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Strong as the heart of the mighty Oak.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Lucky we be having him.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Just when the future was looking grim.
Today, with arms of steel like Hercules, feet as fleet as Mercury, he'll fight for us, do right for us,
he'll be a beacon light for us,
he's Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe. Go, 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 like a bat out of you know where,
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Strike at the pole, let him know you're there,
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
From Damn Yankees, which is coming up at the Smithwick Theater in Los Altos at Foothill College, and that's starting a week from Friday. I'm Sarah Cahill. My guest is Daniel Mitchell. It's great to see you.
Thank you. You too, Sarah.
So you're starring in Damn Yankees, and you live in New York, originally from San Francisco.
That's correct.
So it must be nice to be back home.
It is. I do not miss the fog. I miss the Giants, but I don't miss the fog.
You miss the Giants.
I do miss the Giants. There's actually a nice little contingent of San Francisco Giant fans out in New York City that are there. So we all got together and watched all the playoff games and World Series this last year.
Their old hometown.
Yeah, their old hometown. One of the first things I did when I moved out there was to go to see the ruins of the old Polo Grounds where Willie Mays used to play. And now it's all just kind of our projects and apartments and housing. But there's a plaque or two there that say this is where the Polo Grounds were.
Oh, amazing. So. Amazing. Let's talk a little bit about you before we talk about Damn Yankees. You're an athlete. You have opera training in bel canto.
Yes.
And you're a scholar of Major League Baseball.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're in the Guinness Book of World Records. What is that about?
You know, I was, here we go, right? I was in the largest dodgeball game ever. I was not only in it, I was on the winning team, and I was never knocked out of the game. So I was one of the seven or eight people who were still standing at the end of the world's largest dodgeball game.
When and where was that?
This was at UC Irvine in 2011-ish, I want to say. So there was about 1,000 people in the game, just kind of in a big gym throwing balls. And they had the official dodgeball league there refereeing everything. And all the Guinness people were there and officiated. And they presented everyone with the plaque and... So it's fun. It's fun. Remember, it's like a war zone. It's probably the closest thing I'll ever have
absolutely.
To be in war.
How long did you last?
The whole game. I was never knocked out. It was probably a little less than an hour, probably.
Huh.
A lot of people.
Wow.
You know, and then they'd, as they knocked people out, they'd gather, maybe pause for a couple seconds, gather all the balls together again, and start a new round.
That's amazing. So, Damn Yankees, when was the first time you saw Damn Yankees yourself?
Gosh. Probably in high school when I was starting getting into musicals and into theater and go to libraries and just get every single soundtrack I could and try to learn about it. And this is one of those interesting shows where you have sports and musicals and theater kind of all together.
And you're the perfect person for it.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. The website for information is foothillmusicals.com, foothillmusicals.com, and it opens... a week from Friday.
July 26th.
At Smithwick Theater, Foothill College in Los Altos. And, yeah, foothillmusicals.com. Tell us about your character and.
I play the young version. There's a man named Joe Boyd who has been a lifelong Senators fan, and this takes place in the 1950s. And at that point, the Washington Senators were coming in last place every single year for decade after decade, and the Yankees would always come in first place. In the 1950s, there was only two seasons where the Yankees didn't go to the World Series. So year after year, this man, Joe Boyd, has to watch the Yankees beat his beloved Senators. And one day he makes a deal with the devil. And he says, if I can just be a baseball player, if I could go and be that home run hitter for my Senators, and if we can win the pennant, I'll give you my soul. So I am the young player, Joe Hardy, that he becomes once he sells his soul.
So it's kind of a Faust story.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But then there's a twist at the end.
Well, there's a little escape clause. He says, if I don't like this deal, I want to be able to get out of it right before the season. And of course, making deals with the devil, there's little catches and tricks that the devil tries to play on him to make sure he wins out on the bet.
Let's listen to some music.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets, and little man, little Lola wants you. Make up your mind to have no regrets. Recline yourself, resign yourself, you're through. I always get what I aim for, and your heart and soul is what I came for. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. No use to fight, don't you know you can't win.
You're no exception. Eric Jansen, who's running the board, wants to know who Lola is in Damn Yankees.
Lola is the devil's kind of little assistant.
Mm.
She's very sexy.
Marlena Dietrich kind of.
Originally played by Gwen Verdon, Bob Fosse's wife, who was also the choreographer for this originally. Very sexy, very leggy, and she tries to use her femininity to woo my character, Joe Hardy, into sticking in with the deal.
And does it work?
You have to come and see.
I want to thank Eric Jansen today for running the board, and also Neil Swinkles, who is producer for Open Air here at KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe. Tell us about well, first of all, I want to know your experience with musical theater and how that came about in your life.
I was the wizard, believe it or not. I was the wizard in The Wizard of Oz my freshman year of high school. And kind of from there, just did shows in high school and ended up going to a theater conservatory afterwards. And kind of decided this is what I wanted to do. So,
where did you go to high school?
I went to El Camino High School in South San Francisco. So I did that, and now I'm out living in New York City trying to make a career out of acting.
So at that point, when you were a freshman in high school, you just discovered that you had talents for both. I mean, to be in musical theater, you need lots of different talents at once, singing, acting, dancing. So you just had all of that talent.
It was one of those things where I was always told, hey, you know, once you get to high school, you're going to do acting, right? You're going to do drama class. And I said, okay, yeah, I guess. So once I got into high school and there was an opportunity to, I went and auditioned and I providentially got it, and here I am.
And you did opera also?
Afterwards, once I got into college, I started training, trying to take it more seriously and tried to do some voice training, private voice training. And through there, learned sing classically, and that moves into more musical theater styles.
Yeah. My guest is Daniel Mitchell. He is in Damn Yankees. It's opening a week from tomorrow.
July 26th August 18th.
Running through August 18th, Thursday through Saturday at 8 o'clock. Sundays at 2 o'clock, Smithwick Theater, Foothill College in the Los Altos Hills. And again, the website is foothillmusicals.com. The phone number is 650-949-9000. 7360 650 949 7360. Words and music by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross.
Yes.
Yeah.
They'd also done Pajama Game way back when in the 1950s.
And a movie soon after it was written?
Several years, yeah.
Something like that?
That's right.
Yeah. So this must be pretty great for you to be in a musical about baseball, which is one of your passions.
Well, as our director Tom Goff likes to say, this is kind of the best of both worlds. You know, you can have someone comes in, a wife who loves musicals and loves theater, and she can bring her husband because there's that sports element, that baseball element, or
yeah.
vice versa.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. But, I mean, there must be people who play your role who really don't know much about baseball, and you certainly do.
Well, it's rare. We've got a great cast, and there are lots of people who have a passion for baseball and have a passion for the Giants, especially in the cast. Mm-hmm. So it's a little unusual. I can kind of, instead of having to talk about with the latest show on Broadway, you know, and during the break times, I can talk about, you know, who was pitching the ninth inning last night in the Giants game. So that's been a lot of fun.
So you still have faith in the Giants?
Oh, absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, when you win two World Series the last 3 years, you got to always keep the faith.
Yeah, I hope they turn things around. Who are your choices for the World Series?
This year? Well, you have to say the Giants, right? You know what? The Tigers have been playing very, very well. Hey, the A's have been playing super well, too. They're the underdog, I think, nationally. People don't catch a lot of West Coast games, and they have a low budget, so, you know, they've got as good a chance as anybody.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Damn Yankees, again, it opens July 26th through August 18th. Foothill College, Los Altos Hills, Smithwick Theater. What is the theater like?
You know, it is 700-800 seats in the theater, so it's a big, big space. This is the big summer musical that Foothill Music Theater produces every year. So lots of lavish sets, lots of beautiful costumes. It's really a great company to work for because they win Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Awards very frequently. A lot of people throughout the community who have been inside the theater industry come and support this, or a lot of star in the shows. So it's been a great opportunity. And a lot of people are... maybe turned off by the tag it's a Foothill College. It's not a college production. You know, there are people who are of college age in the show, but this is a professional production with people of all ages in the show.
And that's great.
It's a great opportunity to be a part of this, and it's going to be a really, really great show.
Before I let you go, let me ask you just about the rest of the cast.
Sure.
And other members of the cast and the director and so on.
Sure. Tom Goff is our director. He's a star of Comedy Sports for years and years in San Jose, has directed and acted in hundreds of shows throughout the Bay Area. We've got Mary Melnick, who plays my wife. She's been inside lots and lots of Bay Area shows. We have Jeff Clark, plays Mr. Applegate, the devil. Jen Wheaton-Fox is Lola. Richard Lewis as Mr. Van Buren, the manager of the team, and Caitlin Lawrence Papp as Gloria, the newspaper writer who wants to find out where I just came from, where Joe Hardy came from, because I kind of come out of nowhere and all of a sudden start hitting home runs for the Senators.
Mm. Yeah, sounds great. Damn Yankees at Foothill Music Theater, and again, the website is foothillmusicals.com. Thank you so much, Daniel Mitchell.
Yeah, thank you. I hope to see you at one of the performances.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to close with another piece of music from Damn Yankees.
Now listen to me, you guys. This game of baseball is only one half skill. The other half is something else. Something bigger. You gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have hope. Mustn't sit around and mope. Nothing's half as bad as it may appear. Wait till next year and hope. When your luck is batting zero, get your chin up off the floor. Mister, you can be a hero. You can open any door. There's nothing to it but to do it. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course, but keep that old horse before the cart. First, you gotta have heart. A great slugger we haven't got. A great pitcher we haven't got. A great ball club we haven't got. What do we got? Getting the idea. We've got hope. We don't sit around and mope. Not a solitary sod do we heed, mister, 'cause we've got hope. Boys, I'm proud of you. We're so happy.
From Damn Yankees, it's playing at Foothill Music Theater July 26th through August 18th, foothillmusicals.com. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe, who is away here on Open Air on KALW. And my next guests are actor Mick Mize and director Mina Morita. It's great to see you.
Hello, thanks for having us.
So you're at the Live Oak Theater in Berkeley. The play's called Underneath the Lintel by Glenn Berger.
Yeah.
And explain to us, Underneath the Lintel, L-I-N-T-E-L.
Ah, not lentil, yes. Underneath the Lintel. This is very important. At one point in the play, the character says, you must understand this or all is lost. Underneath the lintel is the top of a door frame. It's, you know, just the top of a door frame. And some pretty substantial events in the lives of the main character and in a person he is tracking occur underneath the lintel. So I think that's the origin of the title.
Now, this is a one-man show. You're a librarian?
Yes, I like to call it a one-man play because it's not something that I wrote.
Uh-huh.
You know, you say one-man show and people go,
right,
oh, so it's about your life as a waiter and somebody working, you know, at a grocery store in addition to acting. But no, it's a one-man play that was written by Glenn Berger in 2001.
Berger lives where?
Where does he live?
I believe he's in upstate New York right now, or somewhere about on the East Coast.
Okay. Yeah. And he's best known for his work on the Spider-Man musical as well.
The ill-fated Spider-Man musical.
Which is still running and doing well. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, he's writing a book about his experience with the project right now. And overall, he's an incredible and completely imaginative theatrical writer. He's written incredible plays like Oh Lovely Glowworm and Underneath the Lintel and several others. But his imagination is, I think, what got him this opportunity with Spider-Man, which then, as you know, changed into quite an adventure that was unexpected, I believe.
About Underneath the Lintel, the LA Weekly said, Glenn Berger's modern fable is outrageously funny, madly literate, a blissfully ludicrous vision quest, a stunner.
Mm-hmm.
So you are a librarian. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in the play.
So the play starts with my character, the librarian. He's never named. He's just listed as the librarian. And he comes in to present to the audience his findings. The evidence that he has found that is leading him to believe that there's, well, what happens is, and he goes through this, he says, I found one day a book was turned in that, and as you'll hear in there's a short piece that I have from the play. The book is 113 years overdue. And this is a librarian who believes very strongly in the rule of law, I think, is a good way of putting it. And he is sort of offended on a very deep level by this. 113 years overdue? That's ridiculous. And so he sets out to get the fine, you know, for the overdue book. And in trying to find this man, who has turned this book in so late, he starts thinking that the person who turned the book in and the person who originally checked the book out were the same man. And so this wide, very strange world starts opening up before him, and he goes to all these different places on the globe in trying to track down this criminal, this miscreant.
Which would mean he'd have to be at least 113 years old.
Which is why this is so strange to the librarian. Because as somebody who's very rigorous and very logical about his life, he lives a very, very safe, small life in a small library in a small town in Holland. There's something sort of offensive about it, almost. You know, this rule breaker, and then something even stranger might be happening here. And that makes him very uncomfortable. And so he's really got to get to the bottom of what becomes this sort of globe-spanning mystery.
Mm.
Yeah. And it brings up a lot of questions about the meaning of an individual life and the worth of what one person can even do in a world, what we leave behind as our legacy, and what it means to live well in the face of extraordinarily unpleasant circumstances. All of these things come up, but the play is structured as this mystery, as this sort of hunt for this criminal that becomes about a lot more.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. It's about an hour and 20 minutes, I think, and there's a lot that goes on.
Mina, what is it like to direct a show like this in terms of having just one person on the stage and sort of engage the audience, and how do you two work together?
It's been a joy in many ways because we have the luxury of really breaking down every moment and every revelation within the script. It's so brilliantly written that there have been layers in the process of rehearsal of uncovering what one line means in one context and then understanding it in the larger picture, and then even in some cases shifting things around based on, is this a presentation of what happened in the past, or is it a revelation in the moment to the person presenting it? And so Mick and I have had the time to really work in a very collaborative way in the room together and talk through everything in detail, which with a larger cast, I don't often have the time to do. Mm-hmm. And we were just speaking about this. I do a lot of new work, new plays, and having this script that has had a number of different productions around the country and in New York, It already has the finesse and the detail and the depth that we had the time to mine.
Yeah, you with the new play, one of the things Mina was talking about in the new play is how much revision has to go through to make a play really great. And this play, it has gotten that attention. Like it's all in there. It's a very deep piece of work. It's what you expect from the best works of art. He's been through it with enough different people to know what his script is about. There's no little tossed off things in here.
You're going to perform an excerpt.
Yeah,
I think. And we should mention that it opens July 20th. That's this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And runs through August 4th, 8 o'clock Monday and Wednesday, and 3 o'clock Saturday and Sunday. This is at Live Oak Theater, which is Shattuck Avenue at Berryman in Berkeley. Beautiful theater. Beautiful theater.
It's a great little space.
The website is justtheater.org, and I want to talk to you also later about Just Theater. Justtheater.org. Phone number is 510-214-3780. So, Mick Mize, we'll do you'll do an excerpt from Underneath the Lintel.
I am a librarian from Hoofddorp. That's Holland. Or rather, I was before I was fired. Or rather, I retired against my will, without my pension. Or rather, that's no concern of yours. Or rather, it will be, but not yet. My special duty for more than many years being to check in the books that came in overnight through the overnight slots, In the back of every book, you see, there's a little envelope. And in this little envelope, there's a little card. And on that little card, the little date the book is due. Now, this is my stamper. Yes, I wasn't letting them keep this. It's lovely. It contains every date there ever was. You don't believe me. August 27th, 1883. There, that's the date Mount Purbavatn in Krakatoa explodes. 36,000 people perish under the ash. It's all in here. All the trials and the joys of history. Here. January 25th, 1971. Helen Shattuck is walking her dog in Dayton when a frozen block of urine from the lavatory of a Pan Am jet falls and hits her on the head, killing her instantly. Yes. The same date, in 1836, Cetewayo, king of the Zulus, is born. Yes, this stamper contains every birth in this room, not just Cetewayo's. And death. Our death is here, too, somewhere. I just don't know where. My death is in here. Still, it gives you a bit of respect for it, doesn't it? The stamper? Well, yes, so, yes, anyways. Each and every day I got up, I took the bus. The thing was, one morning I found this book in the pile. The overdue books, the overnight slots, is strictly for those books not overdue. But we checked anyway. That was my job, to check. Now and then you'd find a book a day or two overdue, sometimes a week. Once, it is said, a book was returned in the slot, mind you, 3 months overdue. Well, we got over it, but we were not amused, and neither was the violator when he saw the fine. Ho ho. Still, we'll proceed. One morning, one fine and miserable and typical morning, I found this book in the pile. It is a Baedeker's travel guide in deplorable condition. We'll label it Evidence Number 1. Well, I was just about to give the card my stamp with the old stamper when my eyes suddenly sprang out of my head and rolled about on the floor and under the table. And why? Because I saw that the book had been checked out in 1873 and never returned until it was returned. Do you understand? That's 113 years overdue. Well. And that's the beginning.
That's wonderful.
Well, that's early in the play. That's not the very beginning.
What an ignominious death to be hit by a frozen block of urine from a Pan Am jet.
Tough life. tough life.
But what was it like for you to get inside the brain of this guy who's obviously just sort of lives with his books and it all goes on inside his head? And what was that? What was
that
like?
It's been one of the most challenging aspects of this production, which is how does a person not used to being on stage? How is it performed by a person who's very used to being on stage? I'm just coming off of a year on the road with Cirque du Soleil. Actually, I was performing as one of the audience plants. And not every Cirque du Soleil show has an audience plant. Very often they'll pull somebody up from the crowd who's honestly just a theater goer. But I was one of the people who was tasked with acting just like a normal person on stage. And that's way harder than you'd think. And so I did that for a year, and I did 294 performances as a normal guy, you know, as a professional performer pretending to be a normal guy. And so I'm bringing some of that into this, but it's a much different thing to realize how often in the theater I've relied on things that are just part of the background of a theatrical mode of being. You know, you know, an actor will turn, you know, pleasantly and as I'm turning away from the microphone, the actor will turn pleasantly and everything just sort of flows together well. And actually not constructing it or constructing it in a way that would seem to be like a non-professional performing is actually a much greater challenge, because you have to forget a whole lot of what the training is and really get inside what it would be like for this person who's used to sitting behind a desk and has sat behind a desk for 20 years, perhaps, getting up in front of a group of people. But then the question becomes, why would a person do that? And the answer, of course, is because he believes so strongly that the story be told that he is willing to go through the intense discomfort of putting himself through. Because nobody wants to go through that. Nobody who's not a crazy person like me, you know, who likes getting up in front of people and performing, would make themselves do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it's
no,
it's
it must be incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. We just have a minute left, but I want to ask you about Just Theater, which you're a member of, and it looks like a really incredible organization. And I just want to ask what the mission of Just Theater, which is presenting this production.
Yeah, Just Theater is all about doing new and challenging work. We're not going to do Christmas Carol anytime soon. We've done a lot of plays. Our co-artistic directors, Jonathan Spector and Molly Aronson Gelb, are really into new works and have
Molly works at the Cal Shakes camp that my daughter goes to.
Yes, Molly's been up there. And they're really challenged and excited by getting new works in front of people. But one of our other missions is to make sure that people can the new works are accessible. So one of the things we've done is when you come to the theater, it's just pay what you can. Like, we're not charging $30 per ticket. It's whatever you can afford to pay to come see some theater that hopefully will be challenging, but also interesting and enjoyable and engaging, too.
Yeah. And there's actually another mystery that they're doing in rep with Underneath the Lintel called A Maze. And so we're on top of their set. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to have A Maze, which is happening on the other evenings in tandem with Lintel.
Yeah.
And it's just a great way to engage their community of theatergoers.
Totally.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Underneath the Lintel, it's this coming Saturday?
Start on Saturday.
Through August 4th, Monday and Wednesdays at 8 o'clock, Saturdays and Sundays at 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. Live Oak Theater, 1301 Shattuck Avenue at Berryman in Berkeley. And the website is justtheater.org, phone number 510-214-3780. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. You're listening to Open Air here on KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill. And special thanks to Eric Jansen, running the board, and Neil Swinkles, who is producer for this show. I'm filling in for David LaTulipe. We will be talking to Diane Keough in a moment about theater on the peninsula. And my next guest will be Emily Dorisa. She's one of the writers and producers for 50 Shades of Grey, the musical. Be back in just a moment.
I used to live my life knowing wrong from right, doing everything I oughta. It was all so black and white. But here's a big decision that I have made. Wanna open my eyes and see all 50 shades.
You're listening to Open Air, the weekly cultural arts show on KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for host David LaTulipe. And special thanks to producer Neil Swinkles and engineer Eric Jansen for today's show. My guest now is Emily Dorisa. You're one of the writers and producers for 50 Shades, the musical. Welcome to KALW.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
This is really exciting. So this is the Northern California exclusive
Yes.
Performance.
This is our California debut.
Coming up this Tuesday through Sunday at the Marines Memorial Theater here in San Francisco. And you're one of the writers on this show?
I am. There are six of us all together. And it was kind of a crazy process in that we thought of the idea last July and put the show up that August, so within a month. So we kind of had all hands in.
That was at the Edinburgh Festival?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Fringe Festival.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a very fun collaborative process that the process was different from maybe the way a typical musical or play might be written, in that it was very much almost like a TV writer room. It was just like, let's go. We gotta get these jokes out there kind of thing.
How did you all get together, the six of you?
Well, we have one common bond, and that is Baby Wants Candy, which is an improvised musical ensemble that started in Chicago and now is in New York and tours, and still based in Chicago as well. And we all come from other walks of comedy, but Baby Wants Candy is kind of the common thread. And Baby Wants Candy was already going to the Fringe, the Edinburgh Fringe. And we used that time to really focus on the show, as well as some time before that.
So 50 Shades the Musical is obviously comes from 50 Shades of Grey, the best-selling series of books by E.L. James, right?
Correct.
And so the musical sort of parodies the books but also pays tribute to them in a way, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of like paying tribute, I think we really give a nod to how much this book has changed society. Maybe not changed, but just this crazy impact it's had on society. So that's kind of where we pay tribute. Like, you know, there are people that are so passionate about this book and these characters, and they really take it so seriously. So we do make light of them as well, but we absolutely respect E.L. James for what she pulled off.
So the audience, and you've I think it sold out in New York when you did it at the audience can be people who really like 50 Shades of Grey and also people who have never heard of it before.
Yes. I mentioned the six writers. Well, when we started the process last July, we had three of us that had read it and three of us that didn't write that had not read it, so that when we wrote it, we said, okay, I was one of the non-readers. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's not read it. Let's write this thing so it's not so inside that no one's going to get it. And because of that, I've now since read the book. But because of that, it really allows the audience to, you know, enjoy the book even if they have not read it. And we give, there's a book club that is reading the book. And that's kind of the Greek chorus of the show. We just needed a way to walk an audience member through the book if they had never read the book. Mm-hmm. So that's what, and so we see the book unfold through these book club ladies.
And so the book club ladies are there for the whole thing, sort of watching what's
Yes, we see them coming in and out. The song that you heard at the top here was the book club ladies singing the praises of 50 Shades. They can't believe how much this book has changed aspects of their life.
And is it the same cast that has been in the on the East Coast?
Yes. This is we've been touring pretty much since April of 2013.
Sounds exhausting.
Yeah. It's been so much fun though. I mean, these audiences, like I said, it's a passionate group. They're very much into, like, it feels like a rock and roll show at the beginning. They're ready to see this show.
We're going to listen to some music. I guess the choices are Open Your Book or Could This Be the One?
Let's do Open Your Book. This is the opening number of the show.
And tell us who the music is, like, who wrote the songs?
Okay, so Open Your Book is definitely a collaborative song in terms of, this was written by Dan Wessels, Amanda Davis, and Al Samuels, and later worked on by Ashley Ward and Jody Shelton.
So are these among the six
yes.
that were in that writer's group that you're
yes.
a part of?
Yes.
Oh. From 50 Shades, the musical, you can see it this coming Tuesday?
Yes.
Through Thursday at 8 o'clock, Friday 6:30 and 9:30, Saturday 3, 6:30 and 9:30, and Sunday at 3 and 6:30. That's a lot of shows. Three in one day, Saturday?
Yeah, we added a couple shows because of demand, so that's a great thing.
That's incredible.
And we are leaving for Edinburgh again, not 50 Shades Musical, but Baby Wants Candy is. And so we are off for August because we'll be a lot of folks in the cast will be in Edinburgh. So
the website is shnsf.com or 50shadesmusical.com. Is that right?
That's 50 right.
50shadesmusical.com is where people can find out about
yes,
this production.
And we'll be touring in the fall, and they can find out more about that as well.
Great. The only Northern California engagement for 50 Shades, the musical. I read one article that pointed out that the audience was laughing all the whole time.
Well, I hope so. That was the goal.
Does E.L. James, the author, know about this?
Well, she does know about us. She has not been to the show, but hopefully that'll change.
So you yourself do stand up. You've sort of performed stand up comedy around the country.
I do. As far as the other writers go, I'm kind of the odd man out because I do stand up and they are improvisers. But that's kind of a little bit of the difference there.
What did that mean in terms of you writing? I mean, did that?
I should say they're musical improvisers. So the other writers can whip out a song out of nowhere.
I see.
So I'm definitely more on the book side of things in terms of crafting the jokes and kind of building a little bit more of the story around the jokes. One in our first performance of the show, we realized that there was no heart to it. We wanted to add more heart to the story. So that's kind of where I came in at that point to be a little bit more helpful, because I think we realized that it was just making too much fun of the book instead of making it a real, like, heartwarming story where you are caring about these characters.
So in that case, did you sort of diverge from the book, or do you feel that in the book you care about the characters?
Well, I mean, the ladies love Christian Grey. So I think where I may personally not be too attached to the characters, we definitely wanted to make sure that we were honoring how much the audience cares about these characters. Mm. And I think we initially maybe came at it from like, can you believe this book? Instead of being like, we can believe it. And here's this kind of honoring them. But I mean, it's all with a wink.
Have you heard also from big fans, I mean, rabid fans of 50 Shades of Grey, that they really enjoy the musical?
So far, yeah. I mean, we've had a couple folks that maybe thought we were going to be doing a serious adaptation. Note to San Francisco, this is not a serious adaptation of 50 Shades of Grey. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as people know this is a parody, this is just a fun night to laugh at themselves and laugh at the book, but also, you know, have a story behind it, they're going to have a great time.
Not something to bring the kids to?
I would not. I mean, I'm not here to judge, but I would not bring my kid to this show. I don't have kids, so
If you did, you wouldn't bring them.
I would say no. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. 50 Shades the Musical, Tuesday, this coming Tuesday through Thursday, 8 o'clock, Friday, 6:30 and 9:30 shows, Saturday, 3, 6:30 and 9:30, and Sunday, 3 and 6:30. I bet the 9:30 shows will be really great.
Oh, yeah. They come ready to party.
Tickets are at shnsf.com or 50shadesmusical.com for more information. And this is at the Marines Memorial Theater here in San Francisco, the show's only Northern California engagement. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much.
We'll end with one other song from the show. What is this?
Could
this be the one?
Yeah, could this be the one?
And disheveled, she's young and out of place. There's sweat pulling round her armpits. I'd like to kiss her face. This person is all wrong. I'm staring at a loaded gun. She's mad at all what I would want. So could this be the one? She's barely out of college. She's not seasoned like I wish she were. I shouldn't even think of it, but I want to be on top of her.
His words are few and cryptic. He's got no plot, no point of view. He's distant, brooding, out of touch. He seems too good to be true.
This person is all wrong. I'm staring at a loaded gun. She's not at all what I would want. So could this be the one?
From 50 Shades, the musical, that's at the Marines Memorial Theater here in San Francisco, starting this coming Tuesday. I'm Sarah Cahill, filling in for David LaTulipe here on Open Air on KALW, and thanks very much again to producer Neil Swinkles and to Eric Jansen for running the board today. My very special guest now is Diane Keough. It's great to see you.
You too, Sarah. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has been.
And you too, Eric. Old home week.
So what have you been... Here, let me get your...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, tell me. What have you been doing and seeing?
Well, two things totally different from 50 Shades. This is at the storied past, the chronicles of the development of drawings in France from the 15th and 16th century, from the 15th through the 19th century, which to me, for anyone to be able to keep a piece of paper that was drawn on from the 1600s is quite incredible.
Yes.
And the Cantor Museum in Stanford has the two separate rooms laid out for this, and the lighting is low, obviously, because they don't want to harm the paper and the drawings. So they say, watch your step. But it's really quite fascinating. Around the room, as you go and see these etchings, you will see little magnifying glasses. The work is so fine on these that you have a magnifying glass to look at it. Now, can you imagine something that's that old, lasting that long?
Mm-mm.
It's really, I was very impressed. Excuse me. And it really what they are, they're products of life drawing classes. And they also highlight, all of these drawings highlight lectures on religious, classical, and mythological subject matter. So the scenes of everyday life, the communications of social, economic, and political changes are all shown in these drawings at the Cantor.
Are these European drawings?
They are. They're all French. Okay. They're from the and they are from a museum in Austin, Texas, that has the entire collection, and they've only shown it three times. It is quite impressive to see this. And I always thought charcoal was kind of something that was rough, and I think of briquettes when I think of charcoal because I'm not an artist. I didn't realize that the charcoal comes from very fine trees. Willow trees is one of them. And they bake it inside of a glass or container so that it doesn't catch fire.
Oh.
But it's baked until it becomes charcoal, which I just learned the other day, which is, I think, very interesting.
Very, very. Yeah.
And by the way, tonight at 5:30, the Elizabeth Kathleen Mitchell, who is the curator for the museum, will be giving a speech about this. We'll be giving a lecture on it at 5:30 at the museum. So anybody that wants to go down to Stanford and go into the museum, by the way, the museum is free. This wonderful, wonderful museum is free. Mm-hmm. And they will be able to go down and hear a lecture to find out much more about this than I've been able to talk about. But just fascinating to see these pictures. They have everything from the 16th century to the 19th century, but primarily the 16th, 17th, and 18th. Everything from nude figure drawings, because they had life classes, to political drawings and some religious things, too. So there's something there for everybody that likes art. And then you can always go see the Rodin sculptures and go to see the Gates of Hell, which are outside there if you want to. It's really impressive. So go down to Stanford. Take you know, we have such wonderful things in the Bay Area that people don't really realize. The Cantor Museum is one of them. It was started by the Stanford family and still going there by some of the things that they have left for them. But anyway, that was one of the things that I did.
Great.
And then I want to talk about a play that I saw at TheaterWorks on Saturday night. I was so blown away by this play because it's called The Loudest Man on Earth. One of the people in it is deaf, one of the actors. There are four people in it altogether. The deaf actor, the girlfriend that comes into the picture, and two other people. The other two people play 20 parts, and you don't even know they're the same two people. They change costumes, they change wigs, they change hair and facial things, so that it looks like you have a huge cast on stage, but there's really four. And the whole thing was written by Catherine Rush. Now, Catherine Rush is the writer. She lives here in the Bay Area. Excuse me, I have a frog in my throat today. I don't like frogs in my throat. But anyway, she lives here in the Bay Area, and she is married to Adrian Blue, who is the deaf man. So she's speaking, an English-speaking lady, and he is a deaf husband. She wrote the play first, then asked him if he would be in it.
Did you say Adrian Blue?
Adrian Blue is his name.
Oh.
Why, do you know them? You have this look on your face. Like,
I'm sorry.
Like maybe you know him. Yeah, his name is Adrian Blue, and he's married to Catherine Rush. And Catherine Rush is the author of the play. And he plays Jordan, a deaf, temperamental, maverick stage director. Now, in his real life, Adrian Blue is a stage director, which is pretty interesting when you consider the fact that he does not speak. And Julie Fitzpatrick, who plays Haley, the love interest in this. She is a charismatic journalist trying to get an interview out of him. And it opens up with a spectacular
under-imposing but very imposing stage set. There's very little on it, but it is a vital part of the play. And it opens up with her coming in and talking to someone up in the booth saying, I'm here for my interview with your director. And then this female voice comes back and says, I'm too busy, I can't do it. And she goes back and forth and says, I want to speak to him. She said, you are speaking to him through me. And so that's the way it starts. And he comes down and he is very upset about the entire thing. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But they ultimately fall in love. They ultimately live together. They have the funniest scene in the world about being in New York and having cockroaches in the kitchen. And the things that happen when he is on stage are incredible. When he tells a joke, you laugh so hard because of the way he tells it. When she tells the same joke, it's not quite so funny. Mm-hmm. But they go through an entire wonderful, wonderful evening.
And this is at Theater Works?
Theater Works in Palo Alto at Lucy Stern.
Okay.
And it is running.
Where do people find out about it?
Well, let me see if I have all
Theater
that information.
I
do have that information. What do you know? It's Palo Alto, 650-463-1960. It's running through the 4th of August. It's at 1305 Middlefield Road, which is right off of Embarcadero.
Great.
And Theater Works has brought some wonderful, wonderful plays in the past, but I think this time they really outdid themselves. You learn so much. You feel so strongly when you're in there. Nobody moved. There's no intermission, but you don't even know it. Mm. That's how good it is. So I recommend seeing this play if you don't see another play this year.
That sounds great. You also saw Oliver. We only have a few minutes left here on Open Air, but let's hear a little bit about Oliver.
Okay. And that's the opening of the play, Oliver Twist, which was, of course, written by Charles Dickens. I think he'd be very happy with the whole show, the way I saw it the other night. And you expect good voices in a Broadway musical. And in this particular case, there were so many wonderful voices. That was the orphans singing Food as the opening number. But when Oliver comes on stage and he separates himself from the orphans and he does his number, everybody in that theater, he's a 12-year-old boy named Cheyenne Hushmond. Everybody just went, oh, his voice was so incredible, and it was so clear, and it was so right on. It was wonderful for this young man to be able to sing like that. There were several other people that did wonderful jobs singing, as they should have. If you're going to see it for the first time, see it again. It's at Broadway by the Bay in Redwood City, and it'll be there through this weekend, and that's it. But if you enjoy a musical, Broadway musical, go and see this one. It is fun.
That's great. Thank you so much, Diane.
It's been great being here.
Diane Keough. Special thanks to Open Air producer Neil Swinkles and board operator Eric Jansen for making today's show possible. I'm Sarah Cahill. A reminder that you can hear this or any recent editions of Open Air at our website, kalw.org. I'll be here again next week. David LaTulippe will be back in 2 weeks for his normal hosting duties at Open Air. Thanks for listening.
Know that I'd go anywhere for your smile, anywhere for your smile, everywhere I'd see.
Would you climb a hill?
Anything.
Wear a daffodil?
Anything.
Leave me all your will?
Anything.
Even fight my bill?
What fisticuffs I'd whisk? Everything for one kiss. Everything, yes, I'd do. Anything,
anything,
anything for you.
Now,
That's I'll Do Anything for You from Oliver, coming out of Open Air instead of the usual Open Air theme song. You're tuned to 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco. Coming up next at 2 o'clock, it's News Hour from the BBC. And then from 3 to 5, All Things Considered. Stay tuned.
I'd do anything for you, dear. Anything for you, me.